Are you listening? Damn.
Coming up on this episode of the Endurance Hour podcast, episode 340, cross-training options for runners dealing with injuries, the pros and cons of wearing headphones while cycling and running, and the rules about competition. Age group nationals, how to qualify, and is it worth it for the travel and expense? And strength training, how much is enough, and how your diet impacts results. The Endurance Hour podcast starts right now. This from Adrian. I'm looking at your run-focused training plan for 16 weeks. My first event is May 22nd of 2022. I do have a question about injury. When you can't run, what are your thoughts, coach, about rowing or running in the pool? Is it either preferable as a substitute? Thank you from Adrian.
That's a great question. And I think aqua jogging is the best cross training if you're injured to simulate running and to simulate running form. Because I feel like I'm the expert at aqua jogging now. My first aqua jogging experience was actually 1997 when I was training for my first Ironman. I got injured and a friend of mine told me to aqua jog. And back then it was in a deep water pool. And I didn't really understand it. I was young and everything was still really new to me. I didn't understand the benefits of it or really how to do it. I never used a belt. And it actually was just something that I'm glad I was introduced to back then because I've used it on and off over the years. We've created a couple YouTube videos regarding aqua jogging. And one of them recently, as of 2020, I created an aqua jogging is not just for injuries anymore because I'm not injured. But I think part of my not being injured is I still incorporate aqua jogging into my program. And I do a lot of skills and drills, like anything that I would do on land, I do in the water. So that is definitely my first go-to for me and what I recommend. Mm-hmm. In the past, I also used to substitute running my run training, and I used to do the step mill and the pre-core, which is also known as the elliptical. And I find that for me now I used to do it just to get my heart rate up. So if I had a 40-minute run, I would do a 40-minute on the step mill. And now I find that the step mill probably do more harm to my calves because I usually get injured in my calves. The step mill probably wasn't the best cross-training tool for me because it was so calf-dependent. Mm. And I was cross-training because I couldn't run because I had a calf injury. And also the elliptical to me now is more like a cycling motion and it simulates more of a riding, a bike. And so that's why I've come to the conclusion that aqua jogging is definitely the best. When it comes to rowing, I'm not a comfortable rower. I don't like sitting on that seat. And I do think rowing is a great total body workout. And I think if you do it right at the right intensity, at the right effort levels, you can get some good aerobic conditioning and strength training in. Yet at the same time, I don't think that's a substitute for running. If you have access to doing other machines or aqua jogging, I think that would be better to simulate running when you're injured. If you can, it just depends on the injury. I know athletes who, like me, try to aqua jog and not at deep water. It's usually like waist deep, but due to their injury, they're still landing on the bottom of the pool. So there's still light impact and that's not good for them. So it really just depends on the injury as well.
Now they have these things that you can do now. I forget what they're called, but it's a treadmill, like a anti-gravity treadmill. Yeah. Where you're on a harness of some kind and it helps alleviate the pounding that you have on your knees or your joints if you're coming back from an injury or if you just want to go through the motions, but you don't want to put all that wear and tear on your body.
Yeah, now I've heard of those, and those usually, if you go there, some PT, physical therapy offices have them. There is a cost to use them. It's not something that you find at a gym or a health club. And it slowly gets you back to 100% of your body weight while you're running. Mm-hmm. So depending on the severity of the injury, maybe you're starting back at 80% or 70, 60, 50% of your body weight. So you're still running on the treadmill, like regular running and impacting the treadmill with less of your body weight. So less force.
I know if you do some searching online, you might find some contraptions that you can attach to your current treadmill that are is like a bungee system that will lessen your weight, almost like having resistance bands when you're doing pull-ups. You can kind of limit your overall tension of how much weight you're hitting on your ground. So if you weigh 200 pounds, you can make it as feel as though you are, you know, running as a 100-pound person with this contraption you put around your waist, bungee system.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And I also like just cycling, you know. So when you're cycling and trying to substitute cycling for a running workout, I would recommend going at whatever RPE or intensity you were planning on doing your running workout, or if you were doing like 2-minute intervals at a high intensity running, do that on the bike and keep your cadence on the bike similar to what kind of cadence you do while running. So, or, you know, if you were going to do a hill workout while running, then you would jump on the bike and do a lower cadence workout to simulate the workout intention as far as intensity goes to get that same cardiovascular benefit.
And I know these are expensive, but those assault air bikes or fan bikes are a good way to get an upper and lower body workout while increasing your cardio at the same time. You can go based on your intensity, how hard you want to go, but that'll get the full range of motion. I really do like those options. Mm-hmm. Next one is from Tina. Tina says, I'm curious what your thoughts are about age group nationals race. Have you ever done it? Could be a fun way to end another season and a good why to put out there. Thanks from Tina.
Yeah, you know, age group nationals, it seems like everyone this day and age can qualify for age group nationals. I know when you go to a qualifying race, which most sprints and or Olympic distance seem to be qualifying races, and you get a top percentage, I don't know what that is, in your age group, you can qualify for nationals. So I do get this question quite a bit. My first nationals experience was in 1996. I was only in the sport for a few years. I qualified and I went to Orange County, California, and it's my one and only DNF. I didn't finish the race. I backed out after the swim, or no, I did the swim. I was able to get through the bike, and then I stopped. I ran out of transition, and I stopped because I had an injury, and it just wasn't worth it to me. I mean, it hurt running from the swim to the bike. It hurt so bad that, I mean, there's no way I could have gotten through the run. But back then, I could have just walked the run, but that wasn't on my mind. My mind was on finishing and finishing strong and competing. Now, if I was injured, I would have still finished. I would have walked the run. So the mindset definitely plays a role in what happens while you're racing. And then I had such a sour taste in my mouth because I DNF'd nationals. I never wanted to do nationals again. It was never something that I set my sights on. And then in 2005, I did age group nationals in Shreveport, Louisiana, because I wanted to qualify for Worlds, which happened to be in Honolulu the following year. And so my why became wanting to go to world championship for Olympic distance. And so that was my motivation to want to do nationals. And then again, I did it a third time. I think it was 2017 or 2018. I happened to make a trip back to Colorado. So on my way back to Georgia, I stopped in Iowa and did nationals in Iowa before I made the final journey back to Atlanta. And my why was just to have fun and see a bunch of my friends there. And just to, you know, kind of get back and see how well I could do in an Olympic distance race. So it was kind of fun.
It says here to qualify, you must finish a USAT-sanctioned age group triathlon of any distance. Distance can be as short as a super sprint or as long as an ultra distance or a full Ironman. These events can include on-road and off-road races. And as you mentioned, there's a percentage or you can gather points. Could just be one event and you could finish in the top percentage or the top three in your age group. And all of a sudden later you'll get a postcard that says, hey, congratulations, you qualified, travel across the country, pay this fee, and we'll give you some cool swag and you'll be in this event. Mm-hmm. Seems like more of a marketing thing and nice little thing, feather you can put in your cap that you participated in the age group nationals, but it really is a stepping stone. You mentioned something about Worlds. If you go to this, then you have an opportunity to do Worlds, whereas you can't just go to Worlds, can you?
No, and I think top 18 in your age group at nationals qualifies you for Worlds. So when an athlete like Tina or anyone else asks me what I think of that, I think if your goal, you know, again, you have to have a strong why, no matter what it is, as long as it's your why. But I think a lot of people, if I always tell them, do you want to go to Worlds? That's a really good reason to want to do Nationals. And you want to make sure, because my friend back in Colorado went to Nationals, qualified for Worlds, and I think it's in Abu Dhabi next year.
Abu Dhabi.
Which again, you got to think about. That would be a great place to go, but that's an expensive trip. So when you're thinking about wanting to go there, you also want to think about the travel, the time of year, the cost, and the focus that you want to have on participating in Worlds.
Here's a question for you, and I'll tell you my thoughts about it first is, when I, maybe early on in my triathlon life, I would have done this, and I did do this. I'll travel to events and I'll go to an Olympic distance far away. But now I'm hard pressed to travel and invest that much time and money into an Olympic distance when I know the event is only going to be 2.5 hours of my racing experience, where it's going to take me, you know, hundreds or $1,000 just to get there, and then travel time. If I do any traveling now, for me, it'll have to be a half or a full to make it worthwhile, to make it worth the trip. Otherwise, there's plenty of local races I can support and do that are sprint or Olympics. What are your thoughts on whether or not you do something far away? Does it have to be a qualifier? Because like Abu Dhabi, very few people are going to say, yeah, I'll go do an Olympic distance over there for an Nationals or some sort of qualification, or they'll go to the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree 100%. Now, you know, I wanted to qualify for the 70.3 World Championships because it was in St. George. It was in the United States. It was a little bit more cost effective to me to go, and it had the 70.3 World Championship title to it. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, it would be really cool to go around the world and travel to other 70.3s, but right now, financially, that's just not feasible for me. And so, you know, I also agree with, I've also qualified for a world championship, trail half marathon world championship that is in Utah. But to me, to go travel that far and pay all that money just for a half marathon doesn't seem worth my while.
Half marathon or half Ironman?
Half marathon.
Oh, okay.
It's a trail race. It's a trail half marathon. But if it was a trail 100 mile race or a trail 50 mile race, and then I would be more likely to put up the finances to do that at a different location. So I understand what you're saying.
This is from Carol, and the answer is a quick one, but it's also a topic of what you can do this in training. Are we allowed to have headphones during either the bike or run? And I'm assuming she means in competition.
Yeah, definitely in competition. And the answer is definitely no. If you were doing just like a running race, like a local 5K or 10K, then you may be able to still wear your headphones. It's really up to the race director. But in the sport of triathlon, whether it's ITU, USAT, or WTC sanctioned races, you are not allowed to wear headphones on the bike or run. And I encourage most people, I encourage everyone, but it doesn't always apply to most people, not to even wear headphones outside in their training, unless they're in a secluded location where there's not a lot of traffic with cars. Maybe wear it while you're running, if you're on the sidewalk and you know you're a little bit safer. And we used to have Walkmans. And so I used to be wearing headphones, and my Walkman would be in my jersey pocket, and I'd be riding, you know, these long rides on the country roads of Colorado, feeling fine. Like I never felt unsafe. But this was back in the 90s, and traffic wasn't never an issue. This day and age, I highly encourage everyone not to even wear headphones biking or running, especially if they're near a road. And I think it's even dangerous on a bike path, because a lot of times bike paths are traffic with pedestrians, kids, families, and they don't hear you. You might not hear them. And so I just love the sound of nature, and that's what I prefer.
Well, and with distracted drivers these days, it's even more dangerous. If you can't hear, they're not paying attention to begin with, then we can have some problems. Now, there are the option, if you do have headphones or AirPods or iPod, whatever that is you put in your ears, you can just do one. and, you know, have the other ear open. Or what I've done as of, I don't know, last 6 or 8 months ago, these over-the-ear bone-conducting MP3 players or Bluetooth headphones where they don't go into your ear, they go around your ear, so your ear is open for sound. And these are what called aftershocks. And I actually did a video on it, I put it on the YouTube channel as a quick look. Hey, I just got these, I think they're cool. And I just received and bought, just got in the mail, the MP3 swim version of these because my other ones were crapping out and I wanted something a little easier that had a good battery and I could change a playlist a little bit. Anyways, I got some for swimming. But these I like a lot, and I always wear something when I'm running or biking. But I've moved to these because they don't block the sound directly from my ear. They go around the ear, so my ear is open.
And a lot of times, sometimes I am motivated to ride my bike inside just so I can listen to podcasts. You know, I'll be like, ooh, I really want to catch up on this podcast. I'm going to ride my bike inside, so I feel like I'm getting the, you know, killing two birds with one stone. I'm getting a good ride in and I'm listening to my podcast.
I do the same thing with YouTube videos where I'll watch. I don't watch NFL football games anymore, really. Unless it's a playoff or one special game because it's a family get together or something. So I always watch YouTube has these 10 to 15 minute highlight clips after the weekend of football that I'll watch while I'm on the treadmill or on the stationary bike on the iPad on YouTube. So that's, yeah, two birds with one stone. If I can do that now instead of going outside, it's a give and take. I love the outside, but I also love to get some other things done and be productive in a way or stay on top of things.
I understand.
From Christine, I've been working out with a trainer 3 times a week. We work in 4-week segments, so every 4 weeks there are new exercises. My question is, how much strength training do I need to build strength? What is ideal? Just need to understand the balance and how much is too much, coach.
Well, first off, I think it's any strength program you do, as long as you enjoy it and it fits in around your lifestyle and you understand it and you're executing the movements correctly, doing something is better than doing nothing. Now, having said that, you know, let's talk about, you know, how do you build strength? Building strength involves manipulating number of sets, number of repetitions, what type of movements you use. And to me, when it comes to the word strength, I'm thinking of heavy load, you know, lower sets, 6 repetitions, you know, 4 to 6 sets of, you know, 4 to 6 repetitions to build maximum strength. So when you are strength training, you don't need to start there. You want to start easy. You want to start with stability, mobility, and then you want to build your way up and doing, you know, 2 to 3 sets of a weight that you can handle maybe 12 to 15 repetitions. And then you go down to a weight that you can handle for 8 to 12 repetitions as you build up to more and more weight with less and less repetitions. That's how you're going to build strength. And so there's just a lot of different models you can follow. But as long as you understand kind of where you're starting at, the ways you measure whether you build strength is you go back to your baseline. Maybe your baseline is, I could never do a pull-up, I could never do a push-up, and now I can. Well, then to me, that's going to tell me that you've built some strength. You can now do push-ups, you can now do pull-ups. And also, when you're building strength, you want to make sure your nutrition plan is in place where you're eating the correct volume of, you know, macronutrients, specifically protein and micronutrients to sustain what you're doing in the weight room. And that's going to impact how much strength you do develop. Now, how much is too much? It really just depends on your current routine and what else you're doing. I think it's great that she's doing it 3 times a week, but if she's also doing other training load with swimming, biking, and running, maybe she only needs to do 2 days a week. It just depends on her goals and just kind of the overall big picture of what she's doing.
Very, very individual in a lot of cases. And of course, your goals and where you are in your strength training journey.
Yeah. And I think the question isn't how much strength training she needs to do to build strength. The question is making sure the plan that she's doing is optimizing her strength gains. Mm-hmm. you know, because there's programs to build strength, and then there's more of the programs to help with body fat loss. Those are two different programs.
Right. This next question is from Dave, and it kind of ties into what Christine was asking somewhat. She goes, he goes, what is the best way to judge whether our training is resulting in the level of adaptation that our training hours are delivering?
Again, great question. You want to first make sure you get some baseline, you know, where are you starting from, go on a plan, and then, you know, retest or reassess your baseline. You can do that by various field tests. You can do that by racing. You know, you start, you know, month one, you're running a 5K distance race, and by month three or four, you're running a half marathon. Ways to check your adaptation: you look at heart rate, pace, power, rate of perceived effort. Those metric variables, knowing those in the beginning and during your training sessions, can also help determine if you're making adaptations, such as you can run a 5K now at a RPE of 8 and you're faster, or your heart rate's lower, or you're able to push more power on the bike at the same rate of perceived effort and you're going faster. So just understanding and being knowledgeable about those metrics to make sure you're adapting, keeping good training logs of subjective feedback, knowing that, you know, there's other factors that affect training besides the actual day-to-day training, mm-hmm. which includes sleep, nutrition, recovery techniques. So there's just a lot of things to look at when you're trying to determine if you're adapting or not. It depends on the age of an athlete. It depends on the experience of an athlete. A new athlete, beginner, is going to adapt to a program and make, I think, bigger changes over a course of a season than an experienced person like myself, who's been in the sport for 30 years and I'm approaching age 50. I'm not, you know, 20 years old anymore. So it's a little bit different. So there's just a lot of factors.
This one ties into the T2 Endurance group on Facebook. And it's from Kathy, who talks about the swim challenge that you posted for December. And she says, swimming is the hardest of the three disciplines for me to do when I'm not officially training. Do you find that to be true as well for you?
First of all, you know, I did follow up, and there is a little thread going on that she is training right now. She's training for running. She's got some half marathons in the book for the fall. What I think by when she means officially training, I think she means when she's not training for a triathlon and she's not following the traditional, you know, swim, bike, run, half Ironman or Ironman training. I think that's the official training she's talking about. And, you know, we chatted a little bit about, you know, motivation, and she mentioned that she likes structured workouts. Like, she's not just going to go to the pool and swim unless she has a specific structure in her training plan. And, you know, my comment to back to her, and like it is to anyone, if you have a strong enough why, that's your motivation to do it. And so, you know, the swim challenge that I present in December every year is to just get people to think about their why for swimming, because a lot of times as a triathlete, swimming is a lot of people's weaker sport. So I'm just trying to get athletes encouraged and motivated to get in the pool. It's the time of year where the weather's changing. It's a good time of year to spend more time indoors. And if you have access to a pool, create a challenge for yourself to work on your technique, endurance, strength, speed in the water, and see where it takes you before you start your main season training plan, or before you start your official training plan.
You posted a picture inside an image. It says, fall in love with the process and the results will follow. I believe that's what it is. The results will come. Well, I always think that I heard this quote recently, don't rush the process, trust the process. And I was thinking about that when I was doing some practice in a different discipline. And then I saw this comment by Sean inside the Facebook group. He goes, the struggle for me is understanding that progress takes time. It took me a full year to get my zone 2 run speed to increase even a slight amount. I want to be able to swim 1,000 meters without stopping, but I know that's going to take time in the water. The good news is I'm staying consistent in my training, so I know it's only a matter of time. What's your takeaways from Sean's comment there?
The word consistency, I think consistency, we've said it before, consistency is key. And if again, going back to Kathy's comment, if she's consistent in the water now, hopefully that'll build a habit and a routine that she's able to develop some endurance and speed and strength now. So when she starts her official program, she's starting it from a different swim fitness level than she's ever started it before. And for Sean, I've done a swim video for analysis with him, and he's actually made a lot of progress just working on his breathing, body balance, rotation, and kick. He's the one, I don't know if we talked about it, but I think I might have wrote it in my newsletter. You know, over 30 days, he went from, you know, doing a 50 yards where he had to stop because he was breathless to swimming 200 nonstop. And now I think he's progressing up to 1,000 nonstop, which is great. So he understands the importance of enjoying the process, and the more importantly, the importance of consistency, I think, helps you enjoy the process more.
Today, we just uploaded two new videos on our YouTube channel, The Endurance Hour, and they were swim form analysis videos. I want to get to those in just a second and kind of comment on one of them. But first, there are two requests for members to be in this T2 Endurance Club, and you have to answer a few questions so we know that you're legitimate and how'd you hear about us. I want to just say welcome to Brett. Brett, he heard about us through YouTube. He's training for an Ironman, and he has a Training Peaks account. I'll let you do your little spiel here. Why do we ask people if they have a Training Peaks account, which is free, by the way? The account is.
A lot of people, endurance athletes, triathletes specifically, know what Training Peaks is. So it's just another question that we ask so we get to see if they even understand what Training Peaks is. Mm-hmm. And we have over 24 programs, swim, bike, run, triathlon programs that we sell on Training Peaks. For purchase. And so, you know, it helps us get a clear understanding. Is this someone who has purchased our program on Training Peaks and that's why they have an account? And so it just helps us get to know them a little bit better.
And as a way to say thank you to those listening and watching, if you go to endurancehour.com/33%, it should be self-explanatory, but that's 33% off a discount code to any of our programs on Training Peaks. So endurancehour.com/33%. We'll give you a code and you can apply that to any of the programs as many times as you want and save some money on a plan.
And if you send us a swim video for analysis, I will send you a 50% off code to any of our swim programs on Training Peaks. Or if you send us a run form for a running video for analysis, I'll send you a 50% off code to any of our running programs on Training Peaks.
And let me just pull this up, make sure that I have it clear so it's understandable. When you do go to our website, when in reference to the swim form or run form analysis, how do you get that? What is that, Wendy? You say it, but I don't know how to find it. On our website, in the top right corner, you'll see a green bar with the words in white, free swim and run form video analysis. Click on that. It'll take you to a page and give you directions on how to submit that to us. Basically, you're going to have a friend of yours or somebody with their smartphone take a video of you swimming. Please swim at least 50 yards or down and back a couple of times, maybe 100 would be nice. And we'll use that clip and Wendy will talk over it and do an analysis.
Yeah, 100 or more would be nice. If you're not up at that level and that 100 meters nonstop, you can't do, that's okay. It's okay to just stop, catch your breath, and then continue swimming.
Yes.
Because depending on what I see, normally I just start talking and the analysis can be, you know, 3 or 4 minutes long. So it would be nice to have a longer video that we could use, even though Dave will just edit the video and you keep swimming. That's okay too.
And everyone can swim really awesome for 25 yards or 25 meters. We want to see over and over again in different, maybe after 75, maybe that's when your weakness presents itself. Maybe we start seeing the elbow drop. Maybe we start seeing the feet go or the breathing adjust. So the more you swim, the more footage we can get. Don't worry about, try to keep it as steady as possible, but I'll edit it and make it look good for our YouTube channel. And then you'll have a free analysis and the big discount code from Wendy for one of the programs. So that's on our website. The other request is a quick one. And it sounds like this person knows you, Wendy. Jeanette. She's from Littleton, Colorado. And she is training for an ultra. And she does have a Training Peaks account. She's a certified health coach and ACE certified health coach at UK Multisport. I don't know if I say her last name or not, but she was Jeanette Sorensen.
Yes.
Okay.
I know her from Colorado.
All right. Welcome, Jeanette. Am I saying it right? Is that Jeanette?
Yeah.
Okay. So there she is. Okay. Speaking of, as I kind of teased or alluded to, the two videos we've uploaded today was a swim form analysis. One was of Catherine and one was of Harrison. Just uploaded them before we began recording. And one was a before and after, but we only showed the after footage. But I want to go over with our audience here of the improvements that Harrison made in his swimming just by some tips with you. And you happen to be able to work with him in person just by chance too.
Yeah. Now, he made a lot of improvements just first by sending me a swim form analysis. And then I knew right away, well, some things that he can fix on his own, such as breathing, body balance, rotation, and kick. I think people underestimate, especially if you're a new swimmer, how important it is to get your breathing first, body balance, rotation, and kick. It all kind of goes together. You manage those, you work on that aspect of swimming, and then it's a lot easier to work on the three main phases of the stroke: phase one, recovery; phase two, hand entry; phase three, the underwater catch and push. Because a lot of times, just by working on the recovery and the hand entry, that automatically can set you up for a stronger catch and push, which make up the pull. So in Harrison's case, number one, just fixing his breathing was definitely a game changer for him. And that helped a lot. That's why you have to be able to breathe to work on your technique. And then just a few body balance drills, like the kick on side drill, where you have one arm out in front of you and you're kicking on your hip, and then you can take an arm pull and rotate to the other side. That was a huge help for him because it allowed him to keep his arm a little bit extended when he rotated to breathe. Because before I helped him, he was dropping that arm, so his face was out of the water inhaling and he had dropped that arm, so he missed out on a complete propulsive force. So I think I didn't mention it in this video, but before he met me, I think he was doing around 220 to 230 per 100. And now he's consistently doing between 130 and 140 per 100. So, I mean, he can't hold that for a long time yet. But just the fact that he can do 100 repeats with, you know, 20-ish seconds rest in between and still maintain that pace is awesome.
Very impressive. And I saw the before video, which he has elsewhere on our YouTube channel, but I saw the footage that you showed me of him before and then the after. I was like, oh my goodness, what an improvement. You almost don't even recognize him as a swimmer anymore because everything is in alignment and his head position is so much better. And I always think, and from your analysis, that speed is really the last thing that you're concerned about. People are looking at dropping time, but when you want to break down the discipline of swimming, speed is not where you want to focus. You want to work on the technique things and the speed will follow.
Yeah. Working on technique in any sport, but especially with something like swimming, is free speed. You know, you start to go faster with less effort.
Yeah. Well, that kind of covers up our program today and all the different questions that we got. Unless there was one more that I didn't have that you wanted to bring up, Wendy.
No, I think we got it all.
Okay. For the most part, I think so. So if you want to submit a question for the podcast, because this is all about you, the multi-sport athlete, the endurance athlete, you can submit it to, you can go to t2coachwendy@gmail.com or wendy@t2coaching.com. Mm-hmm. What are the different emails eventually they can find?
Those are two and they go to the same place.
Good.
I primarily use the t2coachwendy@gmail.com because sometimes I have issues with the other server. But if you email wendy@t2coaching.com, it goes to my Gmail account. It's all good.
Okay. Or on social media, anywhere, whether it's the Instagram, Facebook, we'll find you, or below one of the videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I'll get those alerts. I can check those out and reply and add to our question list for the next week's program. So with that, thank you so much for listening to the Endurance Hour. This is episode 340 for Wendy Mader. I'm Dave Erickson. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. We'll see you back here next time. Adios.
Adios.